We're live and we're local. This is a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, October 17th, 2017. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and on today's show, Bill Mark will be here to preview this weekend's 7th Annual Poetry Grand Slam. We'll talk with members of the Juno Garden Club about the upcoming Garlic Lovers Fest. KTOO's Christy Chambor will be stopping by with some information about new member month activities, and we'll learn about Perseverance Theater's presentation, The Complete Works of William Shakespeare. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. Looking at weather today, showers, highs near 45 for this afternoon, chance of precipitation is 100%. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Hannah Colton, in for Antonia Gonzalez. A federal judge has thrown a wrench into a patent deal between the pharmaceutical company Allergan and the St. Regis Mohawk tribe. In the lawsuit brought by generic drug makers, U.S. Circuit Court Judge William Bryson declared four of Allergan's patents for the dry eye drug Restasis invalid. The company recently transferred those patents to the St. Regis Mohawks in a deal that, if sustained, would shield the patent from a review required by federal law. The unprecedented move was meant to keep low-cost generics from competing with a highly profitable drug. Bryson's decision does not have direct bearing on the sovereign immunity question, but he warned such a deal might not survive legal scrutiny. He said the tribe's sovereign immunity should not be treated as a, quote, commodity that private entities can purchase as a way to avoid legal responsibility. The company and the tribe face other legal and legislative challenges against using sovereign immunity as a way to shield the patents. An Oklahoma tribal member and an Alaska Native business leader have been named to top jobs at the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke announced Monday that Brian Rice of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma is the new director of the BIA. Rice has served in several top leadership positions in the U.S. Forest Service and the Interior, most recently heading up the Office of Wildland Fire. In a statement, he said he looks forward to implementing this administration's regulatory reform initiative, quote, to liberate Native Americans from the bureaucracy that has held them back economically. President Trump has also nominated Alaska Native Corporation leader Tara Sweeney as Assistant Secretary of Indian Affairs for the Interior. Sweeney is a tribal member of the Native Village of Barrow and the Inupiat community of the Arctic Slope, and a longtime advocate for responsible energy policy, rural connectivity, Arctic growth, and Native American self-determination. Native American leaders are urging the Interior Department to take a closer look at the harm brought by climate change. Chuck Kornbach of Wisconsin Public Radio reports from the National Congress of American Indians, or NCAI, convention being held this week in Milwaukee.
Two speakers at the NCAI convention challenged the Trump administration to do a better job on climate change. Outgoing President Brian Clattersby urged the Interior Department to convene a hearing in Washington, D.C. to show how climate change is affecting indigenous communities.
We don't want to get there and debate on what's causing the problem. We want to come and showcase the problem. We want to show you what is happening into our communities from Alaska to California to Louisiana to Florida to Hawaii.
Fawn Sharp, president of the Quinault Nation, who's running to be the next president of NCAI, accused the Trump administration of silencing federal officials from talking about climate change. Sharp says that's even though recent forest fires in her tribe's state, Washington, are a sign global temperatures are warming. Interior Deputy Assistant Secretary John Tsuta also spoke at the convention. He responded to Sharp by saying the department is trying to get its hands around the science of climate change.
What is the science of it? What is, you know, what's going on? Because if we don't understand the science, then we don't know how to address it adequately.
Tsuta says Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke understands the forest fire danger and is working to create forests that are healthier and less susceptible to big fires. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
The Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian will soon add a homemade mile marker from the Standing Rock protests to a long-running exhibit. ArtNet.com reports the nearly 12-foot post was put up by Hickory Edwards of the Onondaga Nation, one of the thousands of activists who gathered to protest the Dakota Access Pipeline. A Facebook photo posted by Edwards last fall shows people attaching signs to the milepost to show how far they traveled to get to the Standing Rock Reservation. With National Native News, I'm Hannah Colton.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Support by Northern Arizona University, a university committed to serving Native American students, offering opportunity in every direction, in Flagstaff, at community colleges around the state, and online. Learn more at nau.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. It is Tuesday. I'm Shelley Delaney. I'm your host. And my first guest today is Bill Merck, here to talk about the 7th Annual Poetry Grand Slam. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Shelley. Thanks for having us back.
Oh, yeah. It's our pleasure. So the Grand Slam is coming up this Saturday. We're going to talk about that. But before we get into the details, I just wanted to ask, you know, what does poetry and spoken word mean to you and mean to the community and to Juno?
I think to the community, there was a need for it when the organization was first brought forth in 2010. Christy Nami Erickson, who's the president, was looking to find a safe place for people to get up and share their thoughts, their emotions, some place where they felt they could be warm and supported, I think. That's one of the primary goals of our organization, is to just put some place where people can come in, be part of a family, and share what you want to share.
And how has your personal history or development as a poet been intertwined with the development of the Wushkanadeyi?
With Wushkanadeyi, I've been writing for longer than I care to admit. But in 2010, when Wushkanadeyi, we were actually called Juno Poetry Slam at that point. We were looking to, Christy wanted to come up with something a little more creative is not the right word, but something that would embrace the community more, something not so generic. And so we had a contest, and Ishmael Hope actually came up with the name Wushkanadeyi, which means parallel trails, parallel paths in Tlingit. So when I first came to this, my writing was a little more private. But since getting involved in the organization, I've taken to enjoy performing a lot more, getting involved with the group. I'm the vice president. Helps me on many levels, personally and professionally. It allows anyone, I think, the confidence to get up in front of a group of people. It helps you build your confidence in your writing, the way you express yourself. So it's been very formative, I think, for us and for me personally, and I think for the community. We continue to see new faces. Even after 7 years, we have new people coming out who we've never met before, whether they're youth, whether they're older folks, all genders, all everything. Everyone, every section of the community seems to come to our events, which is what we're looking for. We really want to celebrate the diversity in the community.
That sounds beautiful.
It's Christy's idea, and we're trying to build on that monthly, and I think we're having some success. We used to just be a small group of folks who would gather back in the canvas in 2010. Now we get some events where we have 150, 200 people show up. So I think that people recognize us in the community now. They know what we're trying to do, and we've been very supported by everyone.
And you are performing on Saturday, is that right?
That is. I'm one of the openers. We have five people who are the opening acts for the headliners. The way the event is structured, we're also going to have Jacob Picard there, local musician who's also known as the Wushkanadeyi Band. does a fabulous job. He's great to partner with. Just a fabulous, fabulous performer. There'll be five of us who are not competing, but are opening just to warm up the audience a little bit. We've been given the opportunity to step up to the mic and share our words. When we are done with our performances, there'll be a little bit of a break. Then we'll pick some judges out of the audience, and then we'll have our five performers come up. Each of them will present poems that will be judged. And then at the end of the day, the person who has the highest score will be selected as the champion for 2017.
So, and we can hear your poetry this evening on KTOO with Ms. G.
Yeah, Ms. G, who's like you and everyone else at the stations here, Annie B., you're just so supportive of our group. We can't thank you folks enough. Ms. G, on her Telling Tales show once a month, allows us to come in and perform and read other work, our work, get together, laugh, talk poetry, just have a good time. So looking forward to that tonight.
Okay, and what time can we listen in for that?
That show starts at 7.
It goes
from 7 to 7:30, yeah, right here in this studio. So,
cool. Well, back to the event. You're here. You're mainly here to talk about the 7th annual Grand Slam. Were you around for the first one?
I was. I was back in 2010. Ironically, I was one of the first people to approach the open mic that first night, and it's changed so much since then. Like I said, the breadth and the depth of the work. The age and the abilities of the performers just continue to improve year after year. It's just so impressive to go to these events and watch people not only watch their work improve and get better and more insightful, but to watch people grow as poets and as performers. We've had some people in our group who started when they were 13, 14 years old. And now they're 17, 18 years old, and they're winning slams, and they're just dominating. They're just phenomenal, phenomenal performers.
What were some of the most memorable moments or unforgettable performances from the first 6 Grand Slams?
One of my favorite memories, I don't believe it was at a Grand Slam, but it was at a slam event. Back a few years ago, we used to have our events structured so that you would have an open mic, which wasn't competitive, and you would take a break, and then we would have a competitive slam after that. We've since changed the format a little bit, where one event will be an open mic, the following month will be a competitive slam, and then the third month will be a writer's workshop. So we've kind of spread things out a little bit. But there was a young person, I think she was 7 or 8 years old, who'd been coming to the events with her mother for a while, and so she was familiar with the format. And she would present, and she would... She would do a really good job, but she was very emotional, and when things maybe didn't break the way she thought they should break, it was hard for her. And she, you know, granted, she's 7 years old. As she grew up, and I haven't seen her for a few years now, but she came to one event. It wasn't a grand slam, however. And she got up and she performed a poem about divorce that was just amazing. I mean, It could have been written by someone with so much more life experience than this 7-year-old girl. And I'd like to think that the exposure that she had to poets in the community, to the events, to the other potential opportunities that are out there, that helped her grow. And she had that support and that strength to get up there and perform this. It just shocked the entire room. Everybody you could hear a pin drop. It was just so emotional and so well written, well thought out, and so well performed. That's the one memory for me that just I just can't get over, and that's probably 5 years ago.
Wow, what a thing to witness!
She was amazing, just phenomenal.
So, what are you looking forward to with number 7?
Well, I'm looking forward to a few things. One, the performers that are competing, as well as the openers, are very strong. If I can just go through the list, I'd like to do that if I could.
Yes, please.
The opening performances are Kristen Price, Jazz Garrett, Mason Gayanos, Nicole Church. The champions who will be competing are Audrey Kohler, Noea Tagaban, Mike Christensen, Zakiya McCorkle, and Ben Miller. Very diverse, very wide variety of work that you're going to see, which is great. Ages, genders, affiliations, I mean, we're all over the board. It's a very, very diverse group. So that excites me quite a bit. Having the opportunity for myself to perform with Jacob Picard again is just something I look forward to on a monthly basis. As an opening act, the 5 openers will get a chance to work with Jacob if they decide they'd like to. The slammers, not so much. The slammers, it'll just be themselves in front of a microphone, their own original work, 3-minute time limit, no accompaniment, get pretty naked up on stage. Mm-hmm. So looking forward to that.
On their own, pretty scary.
And they're all accomplished performers.
I know they can handle it.
These are all people who have done this before. They're very strong. They know what they're getting into. So they no question they will rise to the challenge.
Well, yeah, best of luck to all the performers. I know they're going to crush it. Is there anything new or different about this year's Poetry Grand Slam?
Well, there is. We do have every year at the Grand Slam, we try to bring out a new T-shirt, a new sweatshirt. We do have a new design this year. We've been working with Pixel and Plume. If you've seen our posters around town, those were designed by Pixel and Plume, a very colorful, very wonderful poster. So we're working with them. They helped us come up with a new logo, and that will be on our T-shirts and hoodies, and we'll have those available Saturday. So that's really exciting. We're always looking forward to that. Also, we're really excited to be working again in partnership with the UAS Student Activities Board. Love performing out there at UAS. So just going to be a great, great evening.
All right. Well, if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Bill Merck. We're talking about the 7th Annual Poetry Grand Slam, and that's this Saturday. When and where is the event taking place?
Sign-ups. Oh, doors open at 6:30. There isn't a sign-up sheet. Doors open at 6:30. The event will start at 7 out at the UAS Rec Center. I'd recommend people get there a little early to get a seat. This event, along with our summer event, our summer showcase that we put on, typically fill up pretty quickly. I would estimate that we would have between 100, 150 people at the event. This is not a fundraiser, although it is a pay-as-you-can event. $5 to $10 suggested, but we're not going to turn anybody away. We just want to get as many folks into the room to participate and be a part of what we're trying to do.
Sounds like it's going to be a great event. So that's Saturday, and then do you have anything else going on?
We should have a calendar for our 8th season. We put out a bookmark calendar, and I haven't seen that yet, but we should have those available at the event as well, and that will detail what we're doing, when we're doing it, and where we're doing it. So I wish I had that in front of me, but I apologize, I do not.
Oh, that's okay. We can talk more about where the best place is to get information. And I understand there's a red carpet concert this Thursday that you're involved
in. Yes, and we were talking with Annie B. earlier this week, and she suggested that we get 3 to 5 poets together, do a Facebook Live red carpet concert for 15, 20 minutes on Thursday. I was just thrilled. Just a fantastic idea. So I'm going to be there. Mike Christensen's going to be there. Audrey Kohler is going to be there. I was just talking to some board members this afternoon, still waiting to have a couple others confirm, but that'll be 4 o'clock.
Looking I'm going to be there.
Great, fantastic, outstanding. I can't wait. She's a great host as well. She knows us. Yeah. She's actually co-hosted one of our Grand Slam events a couple years ago with Connor Lendrum, did a fantastic job. So she knows us. She's part of the Wishkanadi family. So couldn't be more excited about the opportunity.
That sounds fantastic. I'm sure we'll make that available on our social media. And speaking of social media and websites, is there a place where people can go to find out more information?
Yeah, a couple places. If you're on Facebook, and who isn't, right? If you type in a Whoosh in your search engine there, we'll come right to the top. You can get a hold of us there. You can send messages to any of the board members. If you also want to communicate with us via email, you can reach out to us at junopoetryslam@gmail.com. Christy will get that email and she'll respond. We're always looking for volunteers. We're always looking for people who want to maybe join the board. Always trying to get those fresh voices and fresh energy. So love to hear from folks.
Excellent. Well, thanks for being here. Again, the event is Saturday, 7th Annual Poetry Grand Slam. Doors open at 6:30. Event starts at 7 o'clock, UAS Rec Center. Pay as you can. Thanks for being here. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
My pleasure. Absolutely enjoyed it and hope to see you there.
All right. Up next is Writer's Almanac.
Yes. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 17th of October, 2017. It's the birthday of Shinichi Suzuki, born in Nagoya, Japan, 1898, who gave us the Suzuki violin method, teaching children to play classical music by listening and imitating as they imitate speech. It's the birthday of Arthur Miller, New York City, 1915. His father was the wealthy owner of a coat factory. Family had a big apartment, a chauffeur, summer home at the beach, and then lost everything in the stock market crash of 1929. Had to move to a poor section of Brooklyn into a 6-room clapboard house where Miller had to share a bedroom with his grandfather. His uncle on his mother's side, Manny Newman, lived in the neighborhood. Uncle Manny was a salesman. He was a big talker, had big schemes for the future, even though he was struggling to make ends meet. Miller got involved in drama when he was in college, wrote a play, All My Sons, 1947, and just before the Broadway premiere, he went to an advance performance in Boston. Standing outside the theater, looked up and saw his uncle Manny, whom he had not seen in years. Realized that Manny was on a business trip to Boston. He'd come to the play on a whim. Arthur Miller said, "I could imagine his grim hotel room, the long trip up from New York in his little car, the hopeless hope of the day's business." And a year later, Miller learned that his Uncle Manny had committed suicide. He decided he had to write a play based on his uncle's life. He talked to Manny's two sons, interviewed them, and then holed up in a tiny cabin in Connecticut and sat down and wrote Death of a Salesman, produced in 1949. In the last scene of the play at Willie Loman's funeral, one of the characters says, "For a salesman, there is no rock bottom to the life. He don't put a bolt to a nut. He don't tell you the law or give you medicine. He's a man way out there in the blue, riding on a smile and a shoeshine. And when they start not smiling back, that's an earthquake. A salesman is got to dream, boy. It comes with the territory." Here's a poem by Patrick Phillips, entitled Once. The father of my son's friend watched his father die, then for some reason came, still grieving, to a soccer field where I, a guy he knew or kind of knew, stood with the others, trying not to stare at the "there but for the grace of God go I" of him, his eyes raw-rimmed behind dark glasses as herds of little bodies shrieked and galloped all around us. Whoever he was before, a trace, a remnant now, shaking in the gray October wind. The truth about love, about all of us, so plain in him, there was nothing left but to pretend I was not watching out the corner of my eye, when the muddy dog and the bouncing ball and the children chasing after it all seemed to veer and disappear inside him. A poem titled Once by Patrick Phillips from Elegy for a Broken Machine, published by Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by TIAA. Whether it's investing, advice, banking, or retirement, TIAA is committed to planning for your success. Learn more at TIAA.org. And by Staples, with copy and print solutions for business, including color copies and presentations, booklets, signage, and more. In stores or at Staples.com, Staples, it's pro time. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It is about 23 minutes after the hour. You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are all from the Juno Garden Club. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Could you all please introduce yourselves and state your official Garden Club titles?
Official? Well, I'm not sure about official, but I'm a member, and I'm usually supposed to be doing the publicity, but I've been gone for a long time, so the person to my left.
What is your name?
My name is Pat Harris.
Okay, Pat.
Yeah, sorry. Person to my left is Corinne Conlon, and she's been doing the publicity, so I'm, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and so basically I became a Garden Club member a couple years ago when Alfreda North kind of cornered me and said that I didn't have to pay for a plant at the plant sale if I got a membership. And that's how I became a member.
Well, she knew the way to your time commitment. And how about you?
I'm Ed Bajarski. My business is Ed's Edible Landscaping, and the Garden Club and I have worked together on a whole lot of particularly tree planting projects around Juneau. And so I guess that's how I've become involved, and I grow a lot of garlic.
And all three of you are master gardeners?
Yes.
Cool. You're probably the first master gardeners I've ever met, so this is exciting for me.
Some of those folks just don't wear it on their sleeves, but yeah. I'll bet you bet more.
We tend to brag about it, but they don't.
Well, let's hear some more bragging from you guys. For those who don't know, what is the Juneau Garden Club?
Well, shall I start, guys?
Yeah.
Okay, so we've been around about 90 years, was founded about 90 years ago.
Did you say
ago.
90 years?
90.
Wow.
Which is fantastic, I think. And so we're kind of dedicated to beautification of Juneau and encouraging gardens and Juneau gardeners. And that's kind of the operating principle that we work on. Our membership is open to everybody, and the memberships are $10 a year. And we have quite a few programs during the winter. And, usually meet Saturdays. Is it the second Saturday?
First
Saturday. Of every month at the Mendenhall Library from 3 to 5.
So this is an active year-round club, and you make some contributions around town, from what I understand, to some of the local, like, public areas, like the Arboretum.
So we do, I mean, there's a lot of funding that happens with the Garden Club. Like, requests will come, and then we'll decide, you know, as a group, like, what we're able to fund. But we also help members take time, and they help out with the Pioneer Home. We're really active with the Arbor Day, with the tree planting for Arbor Day. There's members that also assist with the Johnson Youth Center gardening program. And then there's also a scholarship. So the annual plant sale, which was started by the Juneau Garden Club, I'm looking around just to mm-hmm. confirm, was really meant to be like a scholarship for a student going into horticulture. So the big super plant sale in May was started by the Juneau Garden Club.
And is that scholarship still available?
Yes.
You still do it every year? That's wonderful. What great work. And you only garden in the sunshine, or is it rain or shine?
If we did that, we would never garden.
Pretty much, yeah, there's a wide variety of rubber suits that the members own, and sometimes, I measure it by, is it a 2 or 3 hat day, how many hats, wet hats I go through. This summer has been less nice, less sunny, obviously, than others. But still, we can garden, we do garden out there, rain or shine, and we can grow lots of flowers and vegetables and trees and fruits and berries here in Juneau, which many of us share with other friends, relatives, and the various shelters in town, the food bank, and the glory hole, among other things.
What sort of food crops do well here or do best here?
Cool weather crops, or it helps to have a greenhouse or a hoop house or something covered with clear plastic, so you can kind of control the weather as much or as little as we can. Mm-hmm. But the cool weather crops, certainly potatoes and garlic, cabbages, peas, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, carrots, all of those normally do well here as long as we have good drainage. And certainly the sunshine helps. The greenhouses are pretty necessary if we're going to grow tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, squash, that kind of stuff.
All right. Well, thank you for all of that background information. But the real reason you're here is to tell everybody about the Garlic Lovers Festival and Potluck. So what's going on with that?
Well, it's an annual festival for people that love garlic. And it's happening on Sunday, October 22nd, from 4 o'clock till 6:30 at the Canvas. And so it's terrific. I mean, Ed's going to be there and some other growers, and they're going to have samples of the garlic they grow. People can taste it. And he said he does have a few still for sale if you're still wanting to plant garlic.
You've brought me a couple. I've got Georgian Crystal in my hand and Russian Giant, which,
yes,
honestly, I didn't really know garlic had such creative
and
varieties.
And we are growing because you are holding them by the hard stems that they have. They are hard-necked garlic for that very reason. And they also have very few but very large cloves on each bulb, not like the ones that you buy in the grocery stores, which are mostly out of California or these days out of China. It's very common. And Argentina grows a lot. The hardneck garlics do better here for us, have better flavor, easier to peel. One downside, however, is that they don't store as long, where the California garlics, they'll store forever.
I'll get started on eating this as soon as we wrap up this interview.
Parsley is a good thing to have to as a palate cleanser, or if you have a partner, you should both eat similar quantities of garlic. That's worthwhile.
I have to say the name of your event, Garlic Lovers, put sort of a weird image in my mind. Almost an oxymoron.
Well, we were going to advise that people bring friends to the potluck so that people in your social network will all have garlic breath. You won't be ostracized by your friends.
And, of course, Halloween is coming, so yes. the vampire population is up a little this year, I hear. So, eating more garlic is better and is really good for you.
And it could be effective against zombies, too. I've heard that, but I'm not positive. Just to be careful. Just to be sure.
I'm going to fact check that statement, but good to know. Definitely vampires. We know that much.
Yes.
Possibly zombies. And also, just antioxidants. Okay. So the event is, let's go over the details again, that it's Sunday, correct? You actually have
my cheat sheet. It's Sunday, October 22nd. 4 to 6:30 at the Canvas. So that's on Seward Street. And so the doors will be open. There will be, potluck. So bring a dish. We're encouraging people to bring something that has garlic in it. But if you're intimidated or you just don't have a recipe, don't feel like you have to bring a garlic dish. And
what are all you bringing? Something creative infused with garlic?
It might be the secret sauce that goes on the garlic spam that came from the Minnesota Spam Museum. There'll be some special sauces. I'll bring some chimichurri, which I like. And we will have raw garlic to taste and maybe even rate for folks, have a little survey for people to say which one is their favorite, too hot, too mild, more hot, that kind of thing. So. There have been some very interesting dishes. Even had some garlic wine one year. That was memorable.
So people that have been in town for a while might remember the garlic treats from the Armadillo. And I usually like to try to bring that as well as something else, because those are one of my favorite things.
I don't know if that sounds good
garlic
or not.
Treats. Garlic treats. Oh, they're yummy.
Come on down and try it.
I'm a garlic lover, so, I'm up for it. You got to try everything once, right? Okay, so that's Sunday at the Canvas starting at 4 o'clock. Thank you all for being here today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
It's free.
Oh, great. Even better.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all for being here, and thank you for the awesome garlic, and we're going to play you out with a little garlic song. So come to the Garlic Lovers Fest on Sunday at the Canvas.
Thanks
for being here.
You're welcome.
There are spices and vegetables that you can grow. Some are under the ground, some grow tall. Though they all have their qualities, this you must know, that the garlic is best of them all. Egyptians, Phoenicians, the Vikings, the Greeks, Babylonians, Danes, and Chinese on their voyages took enough garlic for weeks, and their enemies died on the breeze. Since biblical times, in all parts of the earth, it has cured countless sufferings and ills. Oh, if we understood what the garlic is worth, we would throw out our poisonous pills. In Bulgaria's mountains and Russia's white plains, people live to 100 years old. For it's juice of the garlic that runs in their veins. Oh, it's worth twice its weight in pure gold. With selenium, germanium, allicin too, it can fight off all types of disease. So if you've got arthritis, TB, or the flu, just say, peel me a garlic clove, please. To keep away worms and the other bad things that kill plants. If you're one of those people concerned about germs, you can drop one or two in your pants. There are spices and vegetables that you can grow. Some are under the ground, some grow tall. Though they all have their qualities, this you must know, that the garlic is best of them all. Oh, the garlic is best of them all. Yes, the garlic is best of them all.
This is Bird Note. Before Seattle area resident Joanna Bueller started planting at her home, the site was completely barren. Today, towhees, jays, chickadees, swallows, woodpeckers, and others find food and refuge there. She landscaped with birds in mind.
Water, food, and cover. Those are the main elements, I think. So think about what kind of plants are growing naturally in your area. They're hardy, they're adapted to the area. And so they have coexisted, and the birds have coexisted.
By avoiding herbicides, Joanna discovered an added benefit.
How do I control the weeds? I spend hours out there battling on my hands and knees. But at the same time, that's as close as I get to meditation, to prayer. I love being in my garden. It calms me. It puts things back into perspective.
Fall is a good time to plant. The plants are going dormant. They'll put their energy into growing roots and getting established. If you're lucky, nature will do some planting for you.
Years ago, some cottonwoods seeded themselves, and I didn't cut them down. I let them grow, and 25 years later, I now have bald eagles sitting in them. I have great blue heron who perches up there. There's a regular belted kingfisher who's here. As that vegetation has grown, it's provided habitat.
For more on planting for birds, begin at birdnote.org.
It's new member month, and Juno Jazz and Classics is bringing Postmodern Jukebox to Juno. Coincidence? We think not. Let's celebrate these two exciting events by dressing up and meeting up at Amalga Distillery, Sunday, October 22nd from 5 to 7 p.m. 21 and over, please, and cocktails available for purchase. We'll have some new member gifts to distribute and can answer any and all questions about membership. Also, tickets are still available for the show at all the usual outlets. See you Sunday, October 22nd at the distillery.
Dear writers, we're now accepting short stories and creative nonfiction for our November 16th episode of Writer Showcase. Your work should be between 5 and 15 minutes long when read aloud and can be on the theme of your choice. Go to 360north.org to watch past episodes and for more information. Submissions and questions should be sent to arts@ktoo.org by midnight on October 22nd.
It's 22 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm Shelley Delaney. You're listening to Juno Afternoon, and my next guests are here representing Perseverance Theater. Welcome to the show, the very famous Enrique Bravo and Art Roach.
Thanks, Shelley.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, Enrique, great job in the elaborate entrance of
Thank
Chad
you.
Deity. You were an excellent mace. How'd you feel about that production and your role in it?
I really enjoy it. I mean, it's something that I was near and dear to my heart. I mean, as far as a lot of the themes and issues that were brought up, I like to tell people that you could just replace the wrestling with sort of acting, and it's sort of a lot of the same issues. I couldn't ask for a better experience. I was very happy with the production. And we still get to do it one more time in Anchorage in like 3 more weeks.
Cool. So if you missed it here, you can go catch it in Anchorage. All right. And then coming up next for Perseverance Theater is a production in the Black Box. What's the Black Box for those who don't know?
It's actually a brand new series that we're starting. It's sort of connected to what people used to know as Second Stage, but we just sort of changed the name. And what it is it's kind of this new program that Art has been very kind to sort of help cultivate as well, where we're taking artists that are sort of either not in productions in the year that are younger, still sort of figuring it out, to give them another opportunity to sort of perform. So a lot of the artists that we're dealing with are sort of younger, maybe around college age. In fact, three of them are ex-students of mine. So that was the thing about working out at the university. We didn't have an actual production space. So though we were doing a lot of the training there, the last few years, we didn't get to actually get to a production. So that allows us an opportunity to work with these younger actors and sort of give them these opportunities to sort of cut their teeth and stuff. And it doesn't even just happen on that side. Like the stage manager is she's also, learning. She did the Young Company show, and she's Joseph, who's the artistic fellow, Joseph Biagini, and he did a lot of directing in college. This is his opportunity to sort of, direct a play. And they're all doing great work. I've been really happy. We have a first run through tonight.
Cool.
Some people are going to come watch it, as far as like a, not a public run through, but just for some people, some friends of ours, get some feedback.
And the show is called Complete Works of William Shakespeare. And
yes.
It sounds hilarious. I imagine like a lot of running around and costume changes and character switching and chaos. Am I on the right track?
Yeah, you're totally on the right track. That's what's great about doing a piece like this. It's very actor sort of friendly. We don't have a giant set, but we have a lot of props. I mean, props galore. Me and Joseph like to say that it's sort of for Shakespeare lovers and haters alike, because a lot of people, so there's a lot that comes with Shakespeare, like understanding the language. Some people find it boring, but this sort of encompasses all of it. You can get your sort of Shakespeare fix, but it also pokes fun at Shakespeare in a lot of ways. And me and Joseph even have our own sort of jokes that we throw in there just based on our own personal experiences. But yeah, it's got a lot of props, and it's just so great to see that space back to like a performance space. I don't know, a lot of people have walked in there, that sometimes they'll have like the costume still in there or something like that. But we've actually turned it back. We've put some risers up, the seats 50.
Wow.
And then the back part of the stage, put up some curtains. So it's just like, oh, look, there it is, a little black box.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's been nice.
Yeah, I really love the inside jokes that were sort of slipped into the elaborate entrance of Chad Deity. I was sitting next to Colette Costa in the audience. I think we might have been the only ones who got
Colette
it.
Was great. I do remember the show that Colette was at. I didn't think I even referenced her on the show, which is great.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask, what's your favorite prop for the Complete Works?
Oh, we have this like doll that, well, not like a doll. It's kind of like a dummy. It's almost like a crash dummy thing that we use in a couple of different ways. And it's, it makes a couple of cameos, which are pretty great. We have a lot of fun with the music, too.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds great. And when does that get started?
It gets started this Thursday through Sunday. And Thursday through Saturday.
Oh, short run.
Yeah. It's only a one-weekend run.
All right.
Thursday through Saturday at 7:30 and 4 p.m. on Sunday matinee. It's really got some great people in it. DeAndre King, Genevieve Wiley, Rochelle Smallwood, Gina Colaviva, Brian Crowder. It's really great. And Joseph is directing. So, yeah, I'm really, really excited for the community to see it.
Cool. So that's the Complete Works of William Shakespeare, comedy. Enrique Bravo's in it, a bunch of other people, starting Thursday. What else does Perseverance Theater have going on?
They have, they're about to open up Dreaming Glacier Bay, which Ara can talk about.
Let's hear about Dreaming Glacier Bay.
Yeah, that's next on the main stage. I think we should mention that tickets for the Black Box are at the door, pay as you can.
Mm-hmm.
So just show
really?
Up.
For every show?
Yeah.
Yep, for all four shows. And I'm just to clarify, I'm not in it. I'm just helping produce it.
Oh, mm-hmm. Sorry about that.
Yeah,
okay.
No problem.
Yeah. So that's how to get in. Just come on over. 7:30. Usual times. Yeah, and then on the main stage, we have the world premiere of Dreaming Glacier Bay, which is a new play by Joel Bennett. Joel is a filmmaker in town. I mean, he's kind of a man about town. He's been here a long time and done a lot of things, but he's really well known for his documentary film work. He's an extraordinary photographer, and he started working on this play while taking writing classes, I think first with Dan LaFranc and then with Anne Washburn. Over a couple of summers when we had them in to teach, and it just kept going and going. And it's inspired by the fact that in the 1930s, when John Barrymore was the biggest name in Hollywood, he spent several summers up here. He had a big boat, the biggest boat on the West Coast, supposedly, and you'd find him and his boat at Lemmerchair Island in Icy Strait near Glacier Bay. And so the question is why? I mean, there was a couple that had a fox farm there that they then continued to live on the island after they got out of the fox farming business. And Barrymore knew one of them. Muzz Ibach was her name. And she had been a dancer in New York, a Floradora dancer. That's a style of dancing. At the same time as Barrymore was a stage actor before he'd moved to Hollywood. So probably they crossed paths then and knew each other. And then Muzz married a prospector named Joe Ibach, and they built that cabin and had that fox farm. He was one of the last inholdings in Glacier Bay. He had a placer mining claim. Just a really interesting character, both of them. But there's some kind of peculiar connection between them and John Barrymore. So Joel did a lot of research into it. I'm sure we'll get him on at some point to talk about that process. He's
already
fastidious.
Steaming.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, he's a great interview too. So I'll leave all that to him because I don't know all the facts. But what was interesting in the process was at some point plays aren't about history or document. It's a different thing. Plays are about people. And this play became about the friendship between Muzz and John and what it is to have a long, sort of a lifelong friend. And that the two of them have knowledge or – not secrets isn't really the right word, but they're the only two people that know everything that's happened in that friendship. That's what a friendship is, especially a long-term one. And the other men – the other characters in the play are Dolores Barrymore, John's wife in the 30s, and of course Joe. And they each have scenes together as well. But at the heart of the play is this connection that John and Muzz have and what's at the root of it. And that's what it explores. It's a thoughtful, very actor-driven kind of play. It's a terrific cast. And an old friend, Michael Haney, who Enrique worked with a few years ago when we did A Christmas Carol in Anchorage, is back to direct it. He's been really jonesing to work in Juno. Terrific new plays director, and he loves Joel's work. And then a terrific cast of one guest actor and three Alaskan actors.
That sounds fascinating. And what's your role in the production, Art?
Well, just producing it, and I'm involved in the creative team. I'm designing the lighting for it, but I was just wanting to support Joel's work and connect him to Michael and see if they had chemistry, and then do a good production of it.
You guys going to take a trip up to Glacier Bay at some point in the process?
We're not quite sure when that'll happen. When we workshopped it, Michael came to Juno a couple of years ago, and we spent a week on the text with Joel and four actors. And a dramaturg who really spoke for the character of Muzz. She was really fantastic. And we were able to spend a day we had an extra day because of weather in Gustavus. So we flew over to Gustavus and skiffed out to the island and spent a day looking around. And there still are, if you go out to that cabin, it's private property. But in the back room of the cabin, there are all these photos of the Barrymores there. All lots, right. Tons of Barrymore memorabilia, including photos of them with the Ibachs in the cabin. And Joe Ibach knew Rex Beach, who was a famous Western novelist at the time and had books of his and correspondence of his. So there's something interesting about these. There are all these odd iconoclastic characters in corners of Alaska, and that's part of what makes it relatable, I think.
Wow, that sounds super interesting. I only know of the play from the poster and the title. I had no idea what it was going to be about, that Hollywood-Alaska connection. Right, right. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and both Shelley Virginia and Kate Ross, who are in that cast, I did a show with last year, and they're both great.
They're great
actresses, both of them.
And Mike Peterson is back. He's one of the original generation of actors from back in Molly Smith's days, and he's playing Joe Ibach. He's terrific at those kind of blue-collar characters. It's a wonderful, wonderful role for him.
Wow, it sounds like it's going to be a real highlight of the season.
I hope so. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, so that's Dreaming Glacier Bay. And when is that going to open?
That opens next Friday on the main stage, and it runs for 4 weeks. So the 24th through the 18th of November. And there are pay-as-you-can previews next Tuesday and Thursday, and the regular pay-as-you-can schedule, too, of Sunday and Thursday after we open. And there'll be rush tickets as well. And they're all available at the usual outlets.
And is the website a good place to go and get more information?
PTAlaska.org, absolutely.
Yeah, I really like that interface and the calendar and buying tickets there and everything.
Good.
Great. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for being here today. I'm speaking with Enrique Bravo and Art Roach about goings-on at Perseverance Theater. I'm glad you guys could stop by.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Sure.
Thanks.
See you next time. We'll be right back.
The KRNN Spotlight Concert Series presents a night of country music in tribute to longtime DJ Don Drew. Local musicians Andrew and Aaron Heist, Riley Woodford, Annie Bartholomew, Patricia Hull, and more will sing tunes from Don's real country playbook. The show starts at 7 p.m. Wednesday, November 1st at the Goldtown Theater. Tickets at krnn.org, the station, and at the door.
Real country song.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. And my last guest, last but not least, is KTOO's Christy Chambord. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Shelley.
Hi. She's my office neighbor, too. And what's your role and title here at KTOO Public Media?
I am the Regional Development Director for Coast Alaska.
Right. You're one of those Coast Alaska
folks. I'm one of
folks.
Those coast people.
Just kind of taking up our real estate.
Yeah, yeah.
No, just kidding.
I just kind of live here and support you.
Yeah, and just do almost everything for us all the time. So we really appreciate you. And,
thank you.
Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people listening right now recognize your voice from all the awesome spots that you produce.
Oh, thanks.
Some people say that you and I sound alike, but I think I just mimic your tone because you
like
sound
you
so professional.
I feel like you have a much softer, more peaceful, spa-like voice. Mine has a little bit of that, like, I don't know. I feel like the Long Island creeps out every now and again. Oh, yeah.
Maybe you could do an accent for this interview.
No,
because
zero, no.
People won't be able to tell us apart. Okay. All right. So you're here because October is New Member Month. And
yes.
It's kind of your project. What inspires someone to become a member for the first time?
Well, these are great questions. I think it's working. I think we have inspired some folks. We don't have the exact number, but we do know that we've gotten a nice amount of new members thus far. And if there was ever a time to do it, it's now. We have some really wonderful gifts that we're giving as thank yous for becoming a member. Sometimes membership is one of those things where you listen, you hear, you're at our events, you're, you know, somewhere where we are, but you don't give yet. You're not quite there. Mm-hmm. And maybe now with a beautiful new camp mug. And a free latte.
That camp mug is cool.
I wish
I could become a new member again for the first time.
I know. They're really, really neat. And we had Marms and Meeks design a nice, beautiful logo for the upcoming drives. And they did a great job. And we have a lot of great partners, local partners. Last week, if you became a new member, you could bring your receipt into Frenchie's Floral and get a bloom. And then they'll be releasing this week's place on Thursday. So a lot to look forward to. And we have some events coming up. So we're hoping to connect with new members. Or if you have questions or you're like, I want to know a little bit more, but I don't want to call or I don't want to go to a website. You want to talk to a person. We're going to be at Amaga Distillery on Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. ahead of the Postmodern Jukebox Show.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah.
That's great. So people can come and talk to you and meet us face to face and sign up to become a new member.
And I mean, it's really the best time to come talk to us because Annie B and I will be in sparkly sequins dresses. We've committed to this. Yes. And we're going to, you know, Amaga will be open for those 2 hours and we'll hopefully have mugs. I cannot promise. It's all dependent on shipping and you know how that goes here.
Yeah.
But I'll have some coffee coupons and some information if you need it.
That sounds great. What else is on the agenda for New Member Month?
Let's see. I feel like I'm spacing something. There's been so much going on with New Member Month. Oh, and art glasses. So if you're a new member or if you're a current member, an old member, whoever you are, you get advanced registration for art glasses, which are these new really fun art workshops that we're doing in collaboration with the Jack. And the next one's coming up on November 9th. It will be hosted at the Jack with Miss Scarlett's. We're going to be doing live wreath making with evergreen wreaths. So it should be pretty cool. And those tickets go on sale tomorrow for members and to the general public next Wednesday on the 25th.
And those workshops have been filling up and selling out, right?
Yeah.
So having that advanced registration is a real benefit.
It's super important. The last one sold out, and then we added another one, and that sold out. So with this one, it's one-shot deal. So if you don't get in, unfortunately, we can't do a second one for this particular workshop. So get your tickets early and make sure you get them in advance.
Yeah, make sure you become a member so you can get them in advance.
And make sure you get, yes, exactly. Thank you, Shelley.
Yeah, hey, you're all right. Nobody's a bigger cheerleader for KTOO than me, except for maybe you.
No, you.
No, it's you. All right, well, thanks for the updates. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
No, thank you for all you do. And have a great day, everybody. Become a member.
That's Christy Chambord. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for tuning in today to a Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow is Alaska Day. We're going to have a special writer showcase in place of the usual live Juno Afternoon. So don't miss out on that. It's going to be super interesting. And then Thursday on a Juno Afternoon, we'll talk with Dr. Sol Neely, this week's Evening at Egan speaker, about zombies. Spooky. And we'll get a preview of the music of A Tribe Called Red about their Thursday night concert. That's big. It's huge. Can't wait to have them on the show. And Troy Quinn, music director for the Juno Symphony, will be here to talk about weekend concerts. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. That's Thursday on a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Alaska Day, everybody. I'm Shelley Delaney, host of the show. Jeff Brown is the producer. Have a great Juno evening.